Guten Morgen, Paul. Guten Morgen. Come into the office. Have a seat. How have you been?
Ah, oh, thanks, Dr. Helpful Sniff. I haven't seen you for so long. We haven't talked for more than a year now, I believe.
What are you talking about, Paul? It hasn't been a year.
No, it's definitely been 12 months. I feel like I've just lived a whole year since I've talked to you.
No, it's been maybe a couple of weeks since we last spoke. It has not been a year. Uh-huh. Are you telling me it's been 52 weeks?
Yeah, definitely. Why would I think that? What's going on?
I have no idea, Paul, but you are wrong, my friend. Very, very wrong.
Oh, that's never happened before. DCOCD, the DC Events podcast, where we're looking at every single DC event from Crisis on Infinite Earths in 1985 all the way up to whatever's coming out in the future when we get around to getting there. But today, we have come to the year 2006 and an event that is quite peculiar in structure and quite ambitious, and that is 52. It's called 52. There are 52 issues, and it had a sort of bonus mini-series that you don't really need to read, but I did. Anyway, and it is written by Jeff Johns, Grant Morrison, Greg Rucka, Mark Waid, and the art is by a host of people, but it's all pulled together by Keith Giffen, who did the layouts for 52 issues. And then you have J.G. Jones, who did the covers for 52 issues in a weekly book, which is an astounding accomplishment.
It's crazy. Crazy good, but crazy.
Yeah, and check out the art on this. So you've got Joe Bennett, Chris Batista, Ken Lashley, Sean Moll, Eddie Barrows, Todd Knapp, Dale Eaglesham, Phil Jimenez, Mike McCone, and a bunch of other people, including Jimmy Palmiotti, Rob Stoll, Mario Quizza, etc., etc. And lettered by Nick Napolitano, Travis Lanham, Pat Brousseau, Rob Lee, Phil Ballsman and Jared K. Fletcher and Ken Lopez. And colours by Alex Sinclair, David Barron, Brian Miller, Jeremy Cox, Guy Major, Tanya Horry and Richard Horry. And it's all sort of edited by Steve Wacker and then Mike, what was his name?
Mike Siglane, I believe.
Mike Siglane. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome, Paul.
And that's Michael. He's joining me today for this one.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us for this awesome episode all about 52. And I'm pretty sure we just went through 52 names there as well. So or it felt like it anyway.
Yeah, well, this was a weekly. So it came out week after week after week, which means to do that, you need a lot of people. And four writers. And they didn't do you sort of, I wrote page 1 to 6. They sort of kept you in the dark as what was going on. I mean, you can detect it after a while. But, it's quite an astounding little big comic. Anyway, so, Mike, what... can you describe this event in a few sentences?
I shall try, Paul. I shall try. 52 is the story of the missing year in the DC Universe, set between the conclusion of Infinite Crisis, which we covered in DCOCD episode 29. It's scoring a very respectable 81 and currently ranked equal 6 on the ladder with Batman No Man's Land. So it's set between the end of Infinite Crisis and the stories of 1 year later in DC land. And this weekly event set out to tell the story in quote-unquote real time of what happens when Batman, Superman and Wonder Woman disappear for a year and ask who will stand up in their absence. And holy geez, who didn't stand up in their absence? There's so much going on in this story.
Yeah, Yeah, and it really is chock full of stuff. So we've got what? How many main story threads are there?
Okay, I am so on this. Here are your major plot points for what happens 1 year in the DC universe. You have Booster Gold having to deal with an apparently malfunctioning Skeets, his robotic sidekick, as well as a new superhero appearing in the skies of Metropolis by the name of Supernova. So Skeets was sort of giving Booster incorrect information about when things in their future history should have happened, but weren't happening. You've got Lex Luthor launching the Everyman program, which gives average everyday people superpowers if they join up with the program. And John Henry Irons, a.k.a. Steel, begins to investigate this scheme when his niece Natasha joins the program. She becomes a member of the new Infinity Incorporated that Lex sets up. Ralph Dibny gets caught up with a cult that believes that Connor Kent, a.k.a. Superboy, who died during Infinite Crisis, can be resurrected. And they tempt Ralph with the possibility of his beloved wife Sue being brought back from the dead. Yikes. Black Adam forges an international coalition to quell America's metahuman supremacy before providing part of his powers to a prisoner named Adriana and transforming her into Isis so that together they can change the world for the better. And then over in Gotham, you've got former cop Renee Montoya teaming up with Vic Sage, aka The Question, and they investigate what Intergang are up to in their city. And Batman's absence there gives rise to another new hero, Batwoman. Meanwhile, Will Magnus, creator of the Metal Men, is forced to become a member of the Science Squad, which is a collection of the world's greatest criminal scientific minds based on Oolong Island, and they're all under the control of the evil egg Chang Tzu. And meanwhile, finally, in outer space, Adam Strange, Animal Man, and Starfire are trying to make their way home back to Earth, and they're trying to avoid the planet-destroying forces of Lady Styx, and they end up teaming up with Lobo, who has now taken a vow of non-violence after finding religion. Did I miss anything out?
On the script it says, mention anything that number one missed, and you didn't miss a thing, Mike. I think you've done a fantastic job.
Yeah. Like I said, and that's just where those stories start. Some of them go to weird places. Well, Lobo finding religion and taking up a vow of non-violence is weird enough. But yeah, some of them go to some really interesting places. Some of the stories didn't always work for me. There was also a very minor story involving Red Tornado.
Oh yeah.
Basically his remains appeared in the Australian outback. Yes. So lovely when our nation makes an appearance in an American comic.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. And I mean, as an event, I'm calling this an event because I think to make this comic and make it work is an event in itself.
Yes.
It's so complex. It is the quadruple axle of editing and writing to do this. You've got four writers all working on it together, and I'm going to spoil the ending and just say they pull it off. Like, it has a satisfying ending. The whole thing comes together. It all works. There's some brilliant bits in it, absolute shocks in it. And twists, and it was brilliantly set up, and I can't, if you haven't read it, I think this will be one of the few episodes of DCOCD where we don't spoil everything, because I feel like people don't really talk about this much. I mean, people talk about living it when it came out, but I don't hear people saying, going back to it and say, hey, I'm going to read 52 because I hear such good things about it. And it really is that good.
It's a shame it doesn't get talked about more, because it's a great adventure. It's a great story with so many different plot threads. And look, I'll have to admit, I've only ever read before probably about half of this. I had the first three volumes in trade, so I never really finished it. But thankfully, my lovely co-host Paul gifted me volume 4. He was able to acquire that when he was at Heroes Con.
Paul, yes, I went to Heroes
Con. Did you know that you went to Heroes Con, Paul?
I did go to Heroes Con, yes.
So I'm very appreciative of that. And I when we started doing DCOCD, I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to wait until we get closer to recording, because we had 52 on our big list of events when we were first discussing this show. And I thought, I will sit there. I'll wait till we get closer. So I've only just recently read it from start to finish, and there are some great surprises in there. Some great, as you said, some great shocks, some great twists and turns. There's a lot of action and adventure. I'll say it now before I even give my scores away. I love this story. I love this event. It's fantastic. And I think, yeah, it doesn't get talked about more because I think in part because of DC's continual rebooting of their universe. And I think to some it'll just be like, oh, well, that happened, you know, before the New 52 and before Flashpoint, so it doesn't really matter. But it's still a fantastic read. I had so much fun reading this.
Yeah, DC were on such a roll at this time. Like, they'd done, you know, six really complicated, you know, world-building stuff across the whole line, and they ended it with this event. At the same time, they did 1 year later, so they jumped all the books forward 1 year. But this was the story of what happened in that year.
Yes.
So it's all going on simultaneously, and, you know, to come out with a story that is so coherent and, you know, so ambitious, it's satisfying. It's yes. rich and it's full, and it changes things, and things in it matter and develops mm-hmm. characters and debuts. People like Batwoman. You get the new question at the end of it. Renee Montoya, spoilers, becomes a question. there's a lot of stuff about the kind of the rise towards redemption of Black Adam, and then the total falling away from redemption. You know, it's a tragedy. It's awesome. You've got to read it if you haven't read it. Yeah.
The thing I would also say to people who haven't read it is that, you pick up some events and it's kind of like if you don't have all the backstory, you feel lost or you feel like you're missing something. I wouldn't feel this if I was a new person coming into DC fairly cold. I think it's very new reader friendly. I think you would, you know, you might have a few things, but you kind of pick up... I think you would get enough to get you started with this, and if you just went from start to finish, you would say, okay, that's a really cool story, or that's a really cool bunch of stories set in the DC universe. I think there's something there for everyone, and I didn't feel like it was too difficult to get into, if that makes sense. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, because... I mean, when I heard you didn't have the end of the story, you were missing the last trade, it was killing me because it's literally every year, I'm such a nerd, every year when I buy books, I always say, I pick my favorite at the end of the year and I note it somewhere. So, you know, I have a list and it had, you know, all the trades that I bought this year, all the hardcovers. And this volume 4 of 52 was my favorite trade that I bought that year because it just pulled the whole story together.
Yeah.
So when you said, oh, I don't have the end of it and I haven't read it, I was like, oh, you've got to get it, mate. It's, oh, you know, and I knew there were story points that happened there that you don't know about.
Yes. Yes. There were. There were indeed. So can you tell us, Paul, what maybe your top three favorite arcs were in this? If we want to try and avoid spoilers as much as possible, because there are some great surprises in this. But what would be like your top three favorite story arcs across 52?
It's hard because there's different aspects of them that are super strong. Like, for instance, I don't think I could ever see Lex Luthor as a hero after this story. Like, if you want to see Lex Luthor at his most evil, this is the place where he is more evil than anything else you can imagine. He is an irredeemable monster in this.
Mm-hmm.
If this is still in continuity when he joins the Justice League, that is bullshit.
Yeah, he's good call. Good call.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But all right, I love the Ralph story. Ralph's arc is fantastic. And I love the end of Ralph's arc in this. Particularly. The Booster Gold stuff is probably where some of the biggest surprises come.
Yes.
And the tragedy of the Black Adam stuff is, you know, it's off the charts for tragedy.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is really, you know, pretty good. I mean, the Steel story is probably the one of the weakest at the start, but by the end, it, you know, it comes together and it becomes really compelling. What about you, Mike?
My top three, definitely Black Adam story. That is a tragedy. He finds happiness. He's doing good around the world. He has that happiness taken away. And he enacts some pretty brutal vengeance on those who did him wrong. And that was just such a great story. Booster Gold story. I have to admit, I've never really been interested in Booster Gold. I've never been a fan of his. I love this story, though, about Booster Gold. I love how we go from his vanity and his ego getting the better of him, and then we're seeing his frustration with Skeets malfunctioning and telling him wrong dates and times when things are meant to happen, according to what Skeets' historical database is telling him. And then he has to deal with this new superhero, Supernova. And so he's got all this going on, and then there's a revelation as to who Supernova actually is, because they have a fully masked costume. And then there's the later revelation as to who or what Skeets actually is during this, and what's causing him to malfunction. I'd never been a fan of Booster Gold before this. I love this story, though. My third favourite, in no particular order, the story with Renee and Vic, investigating Intergang and the whole stuff with the crime Bible, Renee's journey to becoming the new Question, and the introduction of Batwoman. That was another great detective story, really. Interesting that you really enjoyed Ralph's story and the mystical stuff, because I kind of lost interest in that. I mean, yeah, it looked cool and it was kind of interesting, but the ending was... I just found it too sad. After what happened to poor Sue, and I won't give it away, but it was kind of like, okay, yeah. The Lex stuff, yeah, I agree with you. There are some good elements in it, and yes, he is a monster in this. He really is. But it didn't show me anything new about Lex. To me, it was Lex being Lex and him wanting, kind of spoilers here, to have powers so that he can be, the center of attention and the hero of the world sort of thing. And I kind of thought we've seen that before from Lex. We've kind of, it was just Lex being Lex to me, even though, yeah, there's a scene that is set on New Year's Eve in this story. And oh my gosh, what happens in that is just terrible. It is, and it has the worst pun for a comic book title I think I've read in a long time. Overall, 52 as an event with these multiple plot lines and story arcs going, it's fantastic fun. It's so well done.
And there's so many exciting things introduced in it. I mean, just DC Universe world building going on. Like, you get the Great Ten, the Heroes of China. Mm. They're introduced in this series.
Yeah.
They're not the focus, but they're there and they come and go a few times and they matter to the story. And they have been continued on to the DC Universe to this day.
Yep.
There was a new Infinity Inc. comic for a little while, which was based on the Everyman Survivors from the Lex Luthor plot.
Yep.
We got the 52 Aftermath Four Horsemen specials, which brought the Doom Patrol back in. And Oolong Island becomes the locale for where the new Doom Patrol comic is set from this point on.
Yep.
Yeah. And The Question had some miniseries after this, some backups in Detective Comics. And Batwoman, of course, got backups. And then her own comic came out really strong.
Mm.
And the other thing is the Booster Gold series, which builds on this and, has a really strong premise of the fact that Booster Gold is the time-traveling hero who's doing all these things to fix things, and no one can know about him doing the right thing anymore.
Which, I haven't read that series, but I really want to look into it now, because knowing what his personality is like, that must kill him. That must just drive him nuts.
Yeah, particularly, I mean, the first 12 or 13 issues of that are just solid gold, so really good stuff. And there was, simultaneous of this comic coming out, there was a comic called Tales of the Unexpected, and it had in a backup of Doctor 13, which, I don't know if you recall, Mike, you've read this because I gave it to you, but it has all these... forgotten characters, and there's architects who are behind the scenes, and it's revealed that they're basically the writers of 52.
Yes. Yes, I recall that story. Yes.
And one of the best bits of Legacy, there's Sun Dollar Coffee, which is a really good play on Starbucks. That gets introduced. But one of the things is, this was the comic that introduced the... it's done with whiteboards in this comic where, there's whiteboards and they have all these little notes all over them, scrolls and everything, and they're all hints at things to come. And DC has been using that for years now, and it's still in place in the current Action Comics under Brian Michael Bendis. He does desktops where people have things around their desktop and they're all little hints of story and plot points and stuff.
Mm.
So, I think that's a tiny little detail that's become a DC thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That scene in Rip Hunter's Time Lab with all the stuff on the boards written about what's going on and who's to blame for this, that, and the other. Yeah, it's like so much there to catch the eye and make you think, okay, what's going on? It's really cool stuff, yeah.
Yeah, super fun. Now, should we get into scoring?
I think we should.
Okay. So the way the scoring works is we give scores for four categories out of 10 each, and we also have someone who is a semi-OCD, and I invited Pat Sampson along to be the semi-OCD, and he brought the whole Long Box Crusade crew along.
Didn't he just?
anyway, so eventiness. So if I have to consider how eventy this is, it's a 10. I mean, it went for a year, and it sort of included pretty much everything going on in the DC universe at the time. There's some sort of, plot mechanics going on at times because, you know, there were things they'd done with characters, and 52 is telling these particular stories, and after a while it said, we haven't really addressed some of these plots. And that's when they did the World War III miniseries, which had the Martian Manhunter freaking out and, you know, basically visiting what was going on through the rest of the DC universe and say, okay, yeah, well, Ollie Queen became mayor and, Catwoman got pregnant. It's, you know, things like that were all sort of covered really quickly in that as right. part of there was actually World War III in this because Black Adam declared war on the world.
Mm.
And went on a slight rampage.
Slight.
Yeah.
Yeah, slight, yeah.
You see the Sydney Opera House getting destroyed at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my score, I'm going to give it a 10 for eventiness. I think it's fully eventy.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Mike?
I am with you. I am also giving it 10 for eventiness. This is a massive undertaking to get out 52 weekly issues consecutively. There were no delays. There were no major snafus with it. It's a great looking, great reading, fun adventure. And it's massive. And I think also it's really important to note that this shows you that you don't need the trinity of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in every DC story for it to be a fantastic read.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, they kind of make minor appearances here and there. Supes and Bats sort of not till the end. You have Clark Kent making a few appearances partway through it, but they're not vital to the story. And it shows that there is more to the DC universe than just those three. So, I'm definitely giving it a 10 as well.
Okay. And for the writing?
For the writing, I am going to give 52 a score of 9. I thought this is just I can't stop saying it. It's a fantastic read. It's a fun adventure. You've got Geoff Johns, Grant Morrison, Greg Rucka, and Mark Waid working together, and they've come up with some great stuff. You know, they've made me interested in Booster Gold, a character I never really cared for or had any interest in whatsoever. I want to know what happens to him after this, even though this is before the current DC universe setting. It's still a character I now want to track down and find out more about. The Black Adam stuff, that's such a tragedy. What happens to Black Adam and his family in that? That has him declare a slight rampage called World War III. You know? it's a great read. I'm giving it 9. What about you, Paul?
Well, we're copying each other because I'm giving it a 9 too. And I'm giving it a 9 because it's a really good story. It's compelling and it's, you know, it's structurally it works from the very first page to the very last one. But I'm also giving it a 9 just for the mechanics of doing this story and having four writers and them working together and not just working together, but, you know, being challenged by each other. And it raises all their games, I think, because they're all contributing ideas and parts of the story coming together. And it's brilliant. It's so good. So, a 9.
Nice. So for the art and covers, I am once again going to score a 9. Because this is rock solid stuff. A couple of points of that alone have to be given to J.G. Jones for their covers that they did. The covers for this are fantastic. And to do them for every single issue of a weekly series that ran for a year is just mind-boggling. To keep up that quality at that consistency. I don't know how J.G. did it, but I tip my hat to them. The rest of the art is pretty rock solid as well. I can't think of a bad issue across, and they had scores of different artists working on this, as Paul said in the intro, and it was all really good, solid, consecutive stuff. It's fantastic that they were able to just keep that level coming out on a weekly basis. I still can't get my head around it. It's so well done. So, yeah, 9 for the art and covers for me. What about you, Paul?
I'm giving it 8. I think the covers are absolutely brilliant. The interior art, I don't think it's fantastic. Like, I don't think any of the art is, you know, wow, poster-worthy stuff. But the storytelling is really good, and I think that's because Keith Giffen was working there as, you know, the layout artist for everything. Yeah. So he was, you know, the artists were working off a map that he'd already made for them. So, yeah, I'm giving it an 8. I probably should be more generous, but, yeah, it works really well. Yeah, but the art is not the highlight of this for me. It's the writing is, you know, the real highlight.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, and for impact and legacy, well, I don't think you can underestimate the contributions of this story. And DC fell in love with basically weekly comics after this for quite some time.
Yeah.
And there were variations of it. You know, they would do, you know, oh, we'll go weekly for a while, or we'll do it bi-weekly. And at one stage, I think there was like 3 weekly comics at one time coming out from DC. Yeah, like Batman Eternal and the Earth 2 stuff. And
yep.
So it really gave them a template that they could follow and use. And, you know, partly it had some negative effects in that, you know, they thought they could do this easily and they kept, you know, not doing it as well.
Yeah.
And looking at you, Countdown to Final Crisis. Yeah, I think it's a 7 because the characters that got added, the Great 10, Batwoman, the revitalization of Booster Gold, there's so much there that, you know, continues and matters and was lots of fun, you know, for many years to come. And, you know, the question as well, becoming a new character, a new version of the question.
Mm.
Yeah. 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 What about you?
I'm also going to give it a 7 for impact and legacy, mainly for the impact, because this sort of thing was unprecedented at the time. So I think that's mainly where my score is going for, more on the impact side of things, because this is a huge undertaking. To have a team of writers like Johns, Morrison, Rucker, and Wade working together and bringing out what they have in this story is just fantastic stuff. I think you're right in that they haven't quite matched it ever since, but good on DC for trying. So, yeah, as we said before, it's unfortunate that 52 doesn't get spoken about more because it's great stuff. Even if DC has rebooted the universe several times since this came out, it's still great stuff. So I think 7's a fair score.
Okay, so that's our scores. Let's go listen to Pat and the guys from the Long Box Crusade and see what they have to say.
45.
40, meanwhile, at the Long Box Crusade 7, Studios.
48. 49. 50. 51. 52.
What's up, Rain Man? What you counting?
Hey, guys. Just counting up my issues of 52 for the semi-OCD spot on the DC OCD podcast with Paul Hicks and Mike Garvey.
Are those the ones that you got? Hang on. DC OCD's nuts. Okay. Are those the ones that you got from Heroes Con last year?
Yeah, they are. You remember Paul Hicks was there as well. I'm not sure if he's told anyone else that he was there at Heroes Con. But, you know, he kind of helped me find a lot of these singles. It was a good fun time I had with him. We were on a crusade to find them all. Hey, I got an idea. Why don't you guys help me take a look at these issues and give me a hand determining how to score this for this DC
event? Is there any money in it for me or...
Fortune and glory.
Pipes?
I don't
know. Nah,
it'll pass. Penitent man will pass.
Let's go ahead and find out what we're going to score these things for eventiness. Jason?
Is this like a candy cane scale or?
Okay. I was about ready to roll too.
So eventiness, I have to dig deep in my memory banks here, but this is a series that stuck with me pretty well. And as I recall, it spun out of
Infinite Crisis,
right? And then the three main characters had disappeared, and it brought forth a lot of, I guess, second tier characters. Animal Man jumps to mind. Booster Gold was in it quite a bit. Black Adam. I think we had Batwoman, which I thought was super cool.
Yep.
Just going off the top of my head, I'd have to give this at least an 8 for me that I remember this much after this long of a time.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, I'm going to give my part on the writing. The writing was done, I thought, very well. Scripted pretty good for Jeff Johns, Grant Morrison, Greg Rucka, Mark Waid, with the layouts were done by Keith Giffen.
That's a team right there.
It is. That's
a team. It's a big team. So you had a lot of heavy hitters here writing and scripting this.
Can I tell a quick story?
Sure, go ahead.
So my comic shop.
No, he can't. He literally can't.
Shut up. Because I keep getting interrupted. That's
point well made. Point well made.
So my comic shop, Eric Troutman, wrote for DC Comics for a while. And so he was able to get Greg Rucka, Mark Waid, and Jeff Johns came to our comic shop and signed all 52 of my 52 issues.
Wow. Oh, that's fair.
That was a good day. A good day, sir.
That's awesome.
Humble brag complete. No, it's not even humble. That's just bragging. Back to you, Pat.
Well, for the writing, I think I'm going to give it an 8. For writing the whole 52 issues, man, that's a big task up ahead to do it in a weekly basis like that. I'm giving it an 8 on the writing.
Well, and also to have 4 A-level talents writing simultaneously and weaving these tales together, I thought that was pretty cool as well.
Let's go ahead and get Jared to give us his thoughts on the art and
colors. He don't know nothing about art.
I'm going to focus in on the covers. I remember the interior art being very solid throughout. That's going to be an easy 8 for me. I know we've thrown 8s out a lot, but I want to focus on the covers for a minute. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I believe every single cover of the 52 consecutive weekly covers were drawn by J.G. Jones.
I believe you're correct.
And let me tell you something. 52 weekly covers, one artist is impressive as hell. That is amazing. 52 covers, one every week. Everybody just enter applause sound effect here because J.G. Jones, you are the man. And let me tell you something. The covers looked good. There was not a slouchy cover at all. I'm giving this the full-blown 10. J.G. Jones might not be an artist that springs to the top of everyone's mind when they think classic artists, but A, J.G. Jones is really good and talented, and B, 52 weekly covers in a row. That's awesome.
And I think the way they laid those covers out with the 52 on it just really made it pop with that artwork.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, it was pretty good. Yes, every cover had that very distinctive 52 logo on it. You make a great point, Pat. It was a great theme, well executed, and 52 freaking weekly covers in a row.
I mean, they're iconic, too. I mean, I haven't broken those out of my long box in, you know, it must be 10 years. And I can remember the cover of the first issue with the Wonder Woman sword with the cape draped over it. Just that iconic imagery. I remember the Batwoman cover. There's a lot of good stuff in there. You're absolutely right, Jared. 100%.
Did I mention there's 52 weekly covers in a row? All right. Humble brag here. You know, I once got the gig to do sketch card art for Marvel's trading cards. And I was commissioned to do 30 of them. And I thought I was going to die. 52 cover quality. Woo.
Well done.
Yes. Hats off. I'm giving a full 10.
JG.
A full 10.
Well done.
And you know what? He got to draw a myriad of characters. Like Jason said, with the Wonder Woman sword, you had Booster Gold. I remember the question on the cover. I remember the Dr. Fate on a cover. Tons of characters, and they all looked amazing. Super.
Yeah, the Dr. Fate cover was also legit.
All right. Well, let's go into the last scoring category, and that's Impact and Legacy. And we'll give it to both Jason and Jared. Let me get your thoughts on that.
Hey, I say we action film face off this, Jason. You have 5 points to give. I have 5 points to give.
Okay.
How many are you going to give for the Impact and the Legacy?
Well, I mean, I think if I cut it down the middle, that's 2.5, and we don't do that. Never. The impact at the time was significant. Mm-hmm. And the impact that it had on me was obviously pretty significant as well, as I'm sitting here just digging in the back of my rusty memory and just remembering some great moments in this book. Legacy, though, and this is no fault of the book, this is more of the fault of DC Comics, which decides to reinvent the universe every 3 months, it seems like, was kind of lost. I think I would give it a 3. That's a long rambling way to a 3 for me. So I'll take my 3 and then add it to whatever you have, Jared.
I'm going to bump it up to a 4, but I think I can easily explain that. I kind of fell out of regular comic book collecting not long after this. So I don't know how disassembled or tainted this legacy got, because I know about the New 52 and I know about the reboots of the DC Universe, but I never read them. So if it pretty much scrapped this whole thing, it probably doesn't deserve my 4, but based on my own personal experience, I thought the impact was very strong because it's been, a decade or so, and I still remember the bulk of what happened. The legacy was great. There was a lot of change, and I thought they did it in a great way with, like you said, second-tier characters, bringing them to the forefront, proving they could run a long series without the big three, no Batman, yeah. No Superman, no Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And I just remember eating it up, like, this is good stuff, and I really enjoyed the ride. So I'm going to give it a 4, but then again, shortly thereafter, I fell out of regular collecting, so I don't know what might have been torn down from the legacy like Jason did. So definitely not poo-pooing his, but that brings us to a total of a 7.
I think that's a solid choice there, a 7 for legacy and impact as well, too. You know, you had Batwoman come out of this as well. You had a relaunch of Booster Gold series.
Booster Gold.
By Jeff Johns, too.
Yeah, I read that, man. I read that.
Definitely. Well, any final thoughts on this, guys, before I put these comics back into the long box?
How many do you have there? Good. I'll just jump in with my final thought, just to underscore 52 weekly covers in a row. And man, when you make Booster Gold the forefront of your storyline, I'm in all the time. I love Booster Gold. Jason.
Yeah, I mirror what you said. And just again, I really enjoyed getting to know some of these characters. I enjoyed the character of Black Adam, particularly one of those, technically a villain, I guess, but with heroic qualities, very complicated, complex. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a lot of fun to read. Yes. Got to know Animal Man a little bit more, Lobo a little bit more. Dr. Fate's always cool. So yeah, it was just a fun ride. And, you know, just when the big three eventually came back, it was fun to have them back, but 52 made us miss them not as much as I thought we would.
I agree with what you guys had said there. It's definitely a well-written, well-drawn. The covers, like Jerry said, the covers are amazing. And for them doing it 52 straight weeks is, well.
That is.
I do want to go on record to say I did 30 cards in 30 days. So, you know, I'm basically as good as J.G. Jones is what I'm saying.
Well, let me put it this way. I don't have a piece of J.G. Jones's art hanging on my wall.
Yeah, that's right. But you got a sketch card.
I did. I had to pay full price for that, too, man. I had to get that S off of eBay.
You know what, though? I'm glad we brought this up, actually, because you just said something important. I don't have a piece of J.G. Jones art. I have not met him in my con experiences, but he is going to be on my dang radar. I want to get a original piece from him. You know how I collect original James Bond art. I got some some 007 in my future.
Yeah, the way he drew Wanted, that's a very solid choice.
All right, just to recap, we got an 8 for eventiness. Writing is an 8. Art and covers, a 10. And impact and legacy, 7. That's going to give us a total of 33.
Did we win something?
We'll kick it back.
Is that a winning score? Did we win?
I don't know. I don't know what we would get in Australia.
Vegemite
sandwich.
Well, thanks, guys, for helping me go through the 52. I'm going to put these back into the long box, and we will talk to you later. Thanks, Paul and Mike, for letting us do this.
Okay, thanks, you crazy guys.
Yes, that's... Yeah, thanks.
Wow. These scores are looking really high to me, Mike. I'm going to have to add them up now. Mm. So you gave it a 10, a 9, a 9, and a 7, which is a total of 35. Yep. And I gave it a 10, a 9, an 8, and a 7, which is 34. Mm. And Pat and the crew gave 8, 8, 10, and 7. Mm-hmm. which is a 33, and then we halve it because they're semi-OCD, and we get 17, so because we're rounding up. But good grief, that comes to 86.
Whoa,
which is putting this right on the second place on the ladder on equal footing with Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Holy jeez.
Whoa. Wow.
Good that's grief. That's awesome, but I think it's well-deserved. It's that good a story.
Wow. That's going to upset some old-timers, but wow.
They can go wave their fist at a cloud or something.
All right, let's play a promo, and then we'll come back with the feedback.
Hey, Jared, I have a question.
What's up?
Well, I've been a part of the Longbox Crusade for about a year and a half now.
Yeah? No, that's not a question, man.
I know, I'm getting to it. That was called build-up. Like I was saying, I've been with the Longbox Crusade, and I have gone out and represented the show faithfully.
That's still not a question.
I'm still building up. I was wondering, could I be a part of the official promo? There's this great promo for the podcast that airs across podcast land, and it has Pat Sampson, the founder of the show, you, the art cell artist, and your brother Jason, a.k.a. Weasel Skull. But it doesn't have me, Delvin Williams. The Dark Web. Could you ask the guys if they would let me be a part of the promotion since you were the one who invited me onto the show?
Well, not to be a Mr. Quick to correct, but that was at least two questions. Still, I guess I'll ask. Let me go talk to the guys and you stay here.
Okay, great. Thanks, man.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up, Jared?
What's up, Jared?
I have a question. Delvin's been with us for like a year and a half.
That's not a question.
Yeah, I know. It's called build-up. Hey, can we finally include him on the promo? It's the least we can do. He doesn't know that we're getting paid yet.
And he never will. I mean, do we need him? After all, we already have the Longbox Crusade.
And I provide awesome synopsis and insight on Crusader Chronicles.
And I host Saturday Matinee Theater and also provide these nuts jokes.
Hey, I do that.
Me too. So we're fine as it is. What does Delvin do? We should just let him go.
Wait, he hosts Transformers Chronicles. You should know that, Pat. You're on that show. So what do you say? Can we keep him?
Fine, let's do it. Let's do it live! We could have done this with him in the room. It would have made more sense. Why is he outside?
I think we were doing a bit. Okay, let's do this.
The Longbox Crusade Podcast Network is the place to be if you like deep dives into comics of yesteryear with the Longbox Crusade. Chronological reading journals with Crusader Chronicles. Indexing forgotten TV shows, films, and serials with Saturday Matinee Theater. Pitting two randomly selected action films against one another in Action Film Face Off, cataloging the Marvel run of the Transformers comic with Transformers Chronicles, and whatever else the demented minds of Pat, Jared, Jason, and Delvin can come up with. If that sounds like it might be for you, be sure to subscribe to The Longbox Crusade on iTunes, Google Play, and pretty much all reputable podcast feeds. Or check us out directly at www.longboxcrusade.com, where we continue our quest to...
So we got some feedback in. What have we got there, Mike?
First off, we got a comment from Sean Ross on episode 29, where we looked at Infinite Crisis. And Sean said, great episode. To this day, the last page reveal of the Crisis Survivors, that being Supes, Lois, Ginger Fro, and future Twitter user Kryptonian, is one of my favorite surprises. I literally gasped out loud. Thanks, Sean.
Oh. It is a good one. That's right at the start of that story. We got one from Martin Gray on the same episode, and he said, great job, lads. I especially like Al giving us the full McGlinchey when he got to the end of his scoring. Thanks, Mike and Paul, for once again giving us an impressive semi. I enjoyed Infinite Crisis mostly, with the same provisos as the rest of you. There was just too much violence, and I hated that the survivors of Crisis on Infinite Earths didn't get their happy ending after all. But boy, was it exciting. I wasn't too bothered about the changing artists. I was well used to it by then. I suppose reading them in a lump, that the changes are more jarring. Sort of. But they fixed it in the trade as well.
Still on episode 29, we had a comment from Tim Price as well. And Tim said, excellent episode. I enjoyed Infinite Crisis a lot, so I'm glad it did well. Also that you didn't shy away from the bad, namely the ultra-violence. It could be viewed as a meta-commentary on the way the DCU had changed and what Alex and Superboy Prime, or Sprime, as Tim has written, were trying to do. But it was so horrible, any message got lost in the gore. Hey, has Deathstroke ever had to answer for murdering Phantom Lady? If not, it's long overdue. You guys made me chuckle calling Alex the evil Luthor, as opposed to Lex, I guess. great episode, and Paul, those are some sweet Legos.
Thanks very much. Awesome. All right. And we also got an email from Carl Bakey. And he said, "Hey, fellas, been loving waiting for Doom over the last few years. I think my first listen was your 100th anniversary." I don't think we've done 100 years, but maybe talk about the episode.
You know what he means.
Anyway. "And I have been faithfully tuning into the DC OCD cast, mostly scratching my head along the way. I am a comic book noob, but through collecting issues of Doom Patrol, I'd gotten to dig a bit deeper into the history of the DC Universe. I picked up Crisis on Infinite Earths after listening to your first podcast and honestly couldn't get into it because of the immense amount of characters, heroes and villains alike that I didn't know. What does it matter, I thought to myself. They're all going to get wiped out of existence by the end of this anyway. Well, in an effort to take on Morrison's Final Crisis, I consulted the internet to see what I should read leading up to this event to better understand it. Someone told me to start with Grant's Seven Soldiers storyline and then read the OMAC project, shout out to your brother iSatellite Lego, Paul, and then, of course, read through Infinite Crisis. I gotta say, I really enjoyed reading this event through the DC Universe app on my shiny tablet. This is the first time I've been reading digitally because I hate my bank account. The art, colors, and overall pacing of the story really helped me tear through it. It's been fun seeing the Brotherhood of Evil and the Doom Patrol pop up in these sprawling splash pages and also realizing I've familiarized myself with a few more DC folks between my initial reading of the original Crisis and now. Pleased to know my timing of reading this event matched up so splendidly with your episode covering it. Your scoring has been really fair through all events up to this point, so I commend you on that, gentlemen. Sincerely yours, Carl. P.S. Do I get extra credit for picking up the full run of JLA Avengers from my local comic shop after hearing your episode? No? No? Well, shit.
Thank you, Carl. And yes, I think you do earn some extra credit for that. Yeah.
That's really good to hear someone reading along. And I mean, Mike and I have been reading DC Comics for a long time, so it's really hard to know whether our perspective is well adjusted and fair.
Yeah, not biased at all. No.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's good to hear that you think our scores are fair.
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes these scores come out and I go, ooh. Hope that doesn't upset someone.
Look, you can't please everyone, Paul. Look,
No.
I think to be honest, though, I think you and I have, with every episode of DCOCD that we've either done together or you've done with other guest hosts, we've all been as fair as we possibly can be. And just being honest with our critiques and observations of the stories as best as possible. And I think the scores really are fair across all of them. So if people are upset by that, well, so be it.
Have a hug.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, if you want to see the latter and see these scores that may be fair or unfair, depending on your point of view, they are all over at waitingfordoom.com, and we have the latter there. You can see it sorted by episode number, or you can see it sorted by ranking, which is, it's fun. Mm. And, of course, we'll have a post for this show, and you can leave comments there, like some of the people tonight did. And also, we have our DCOCDcast Twitter account, and there's the email, DCOCDcast@gmail.com. And I think it's about time we ask some people for more reviews. So, I mean, people hear about these shows by seeing reviews on things like iTunes and wherever else you can leave a review. I'll challenge people to find the weirdest spot to leave a review and leave a review there and show us. That would be great.
Good luck to us all.
Take the weird review challenge. But, of course, if you leave a review in public, you get a Waiting for Doom postcard, which we have a dwindling supply of the original run of those.
Yep.
And we're dying to send you one if you leave us a review and help spread the word about what we're doing, this thing that we do, because we have compulsions.
Yes, sure.
So what's on the cards next, Mike?
Next time on the feed, we will be coming back with another episode of Waiting for Doom. We'll be looking at issues 6 and 7 of Volume 5, which will be cool. One of those is the spotlight issue on Negative Man, so looking forward to covering that one. And then we'll be coming back with another DCOCD looking at Countdown to Final Crisis.
Ah, excellent. Well, thanks for joining me, Mike. And
thanks, Paul.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.